How can I reduce the suffering with the very, very precious time that I have on Earth with these few people that are on this planet right now, that none of them will be here in about 100 years, and that we need to act as a generation of people here today that are doing their best. And at the same time, we need to look into systems that prevent us. So there needs to be this mindset change of not we need to destroy this company and this company needs to be brought down. It's how could we help this company shift their business model to, into using the resources they have at hand to do something better?
Hello and welcome to The Empathizer, the podcast for more mutual understanding in our society. My name is Sebastian Krenzer and I listen to my guests to understand what moves them. Today I'm listening to Leila. She talks about her conviction that we need to do things better. She is moved by the regeneration of our environment and our being. She wants to inspire people to reflect on what it means to be and what our being is as individuals and as a global community. We are all interdependent and we need to learn to share better. Important aspects of this for her are ownership and belonging, a deep and thought-provoking conversation. And now enjoy listening. Hello, Leila, to the podcast Empathizer. I welcome you today very much. And as usual, I will start with my question. What is your topic? What is your issue which is very moving you, which is important and meaningful for you, and you would like to be heard with?
Amazing. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. I'm so excited to be here with somebody from my local area as well. And my key point that I think about every day a lot is climate change. I think that we are on the precipice of difficult times ahead. We are already having difficult times in different countries in the global south. We are seeing the heats and the floods and all of these things happening here also in Europe. And what I see as a potential for us to take action is bringing in the inner dimension. How can we together, take a step back, look at the forest and not just the trees, and understand what are the conflicts that are impeding us from actually making the right decisions, and how can we really imagine a future that's worth living, that's regenerative, that gives us energy, that is community-based, and that supports everybody's needs going forward. So excited to share some of the things I've been working on in that direction.
Oh, well, that sounds very huge, a big topic, and I have heard it's in general it's a challenge of climate change, and for you the inner dimension to this topic is important, and you're thinking a lot about what it's needed, what can we do, what can we develop in us to challenge and to coming into action towards this climate change challenge, and what do we need to make good decisions and actions? And it sounds to me that you are doing a lot about this and thinking about this, and you pointed out this consequences of this kind of climate change for the global south and also in Europe. And yeah. I have the question, why is it moving you when you see all this? What does it make with you?
Well, since we're on a podcast to talk about our feelings and everything, I'm going to get really deep, if that's all right.
It's fine. It's an
But yeah, I think throughout the years, that question, I would have answered it in a different way. Maybe 10 years ago, I would have answered it in the sense of, oh, humans, what are we doing? We need to be better. We can be better. Maybe last 3 or 4 years ago, I would have answered in the way of, oh, we just need technology and we need finance and we need to find the solutions. Last year, I would have probably answered with, we have the tech, we have the finance. What's happening? And last year, I decided to quit my corporate job where I was doing really well. I was working in sustainability. I had a great team. And I took it for two reasons. One, to take care of my personal physical health and mental health, but also to think about the health of the planet and how those two things are interlinked. And in that, I've been in lots of hospitals personally for kind of personal health reasons. And at the same time, I've taken the time to really understand what we mean when we say mental health and mental fitness. And so I had the opportunity over a 7 month period to be able to host climate circles. So these places where people could just come in for an hour and they could just pour out their souls of all of the frustration and the anger and the fear, anything that they wanted to, no positive to toxic positivity, just pour out what's in your soul. And that taught me a lot because even though it was online, we created a safe space for people in Germany, for people all around the world to come in and have this. And this is all because of an NGO called One Resilient Earth, whose founder used to work for the United Nations as well. So it comes from a deep place and also from a place of connecting this with Indigenous wisdom. What have Indigenous groups and peoples, what have they been doing over the last so many years to make sure that they were able to work in as a group? And in there, I've heard a lot of things that move me. I've heard from people that might have mental or physical disabilities who are worried that the problem about climate change is not when the world burns. It's everything that's going to happen before, the shortage of medication. If something happens really quickly, a natural disaster, and they live on the third floor and they have a physical disability, they're going to be left behind. All of these feelings. And then one of the things that really moved me that's here every day is one of the participants who had been going around his entire city talking to corporations, talking to governments about the SDGs and making that tangible. And then he started going to farms to explain to farmers that it was not their God that is punishing them. That they are without food, that they can't feed their family. They are going on through these struggles, not because they haven't prayed or they haven't done their best, that their God is not punishing them, that this is a consequence of all of our actions. And that really brought it deep to me. And this was in the beginning of that journey. So it really took me some time to really listen. And since then, I've been thinking about a lot of these spiritual dimensions, right? Not necessarily religious, not necessarily in a way that you're thinking about a God, but in the way of when you're sitting with yourself, by yourself, what are you thinking about? What makes sense for you? What is the lens that you're viewing the world? And so we have the African traditions that think about Ubuntu, right? I am because we are. Or we have some indigenous concepts from Latin America, which literally believe that we are the earth experiencing itself. Just as a flower comes out of the planet and that is nature, so do we come out of this planet and we are nature. And other people within the kind of cosmic community that think that we are the universe experiencing itself. And so one of the things that really worries me is that one, I think that we see ourselves, this idea of separation that we talk a lot about, right? We talk about the separation between you and I, but also the separation of nature. I can dominate nature. I can cut down this tree without understanding the ecosystem that this tree is giving life to. And how do we make a way forward that feels safe, that feels true, and that we're doing things in a way that is just for those people that are changing, having to do so many changes. And I'll give one short example and I'll pause there. But we know we need to stop eating meat. That's a fact if we talk about climate change. However, if we think about Brazil as an example, a large part of our economy is dependent on that meat production. If we were to today, all Europeans, all Americans say, we're not going to eat meat. That would destroy the Brazilian economic system as it is today, and a lot of livelihoods. And so much conflict would come out of that. And so how I see the IDGs or this inner development world is that we have the potential to be supporting these conversations as they happen or even before they happening, knowing that climate change is but a symptom of our social and environmental issues, and that it's hard. It's very hard. It's very hard to work with humans. And at the same time, there's nothing from a biological level, there's nothing that feels better than being together with a community where you feel like you belong and finding our ways throughout that as well.
What I've heard is that it's very hard to work with people, especially in the context of climate change and the systemic independencies between if you change this, this has consequences there, and then conflicts can evolve and caused by this. And your challenges, and you're thinking a lot about how to, yeah, actually, I guess, to moderate this kind of process and bringing people together. And I guess I've heard that you experience or could observe this kind of disconnection and separation of human being and also humanity towards nature. That's this kind of disconnect. And yeah, how do you feel about that when you're working very hard on this topic? Because it's, I can sense that this is very driving you and moving you to have an impact or doing something about this in this context. And at the same time, yeah, and you mentioned this kind of inner development, and I guess you mean also it's an inner process and inner development for you acting in this field, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I love to explain inner development to others, one, in the way that it's something that we need to do as a collective, right? Uh-huh. Not me, Lila, Jessica, going out and being the best person in the world and say that's not the way it is.
Yeah.
Us as a collective finding ways to do better. And at the same time, the only way we're going to be able to do that is if we individually also take action, right? So yeah, within my own family structures, I think about it all the time. I think about how can I be a better partner to my partner? How can I be a better sister? How can I be a better caretaker or steward of my cat? And what are her needs? And what am I not listening to her? And how all of this kind of translates into the wider movement, right? A very, very simple example I'll give you that really kind of broke me. But one day is we were having all these discussions around regenerative ways of working. And we had a dog with us, and we were in a near a house, and that dog was on the leash and was tied to kind of the pole so she could have free will and close as free as possible where she wouldn't be in danger. Mm-hmm. And then we went inside the house and went all to get a cup of water, and we hear her barking. And we're like, why is she barking? Is there something? And then we go and we see that she's two like centimeter, like really, really close to her water. And we hadn't noticed that it was this close to her water for her to get there.
Oh.
So we looked at that and we looked at each other and we were like, this is what we need to always be understanding, that we're never going to be perfect. We're always going to get things wrong. But the next time we're surrounded by another creature that we take care of, that being before we take care of ourselves, that we are taking care of the ones that maybe have less experience, that have maybe less capability in a way that serves them and is useful for them. And this was a day-to-day thing that happened, right? But if we were to look at that in the overall scope of things, I think about pigeons and everything that we've done to pigeons, and how we have brought them into the city in a way that they served our purpose. They were carrying our message. And the moment we found a better way to deliver our message, oh, pigeons for rats.
Yes.
It's this view of the vermin, of the negative, of the ugh, ugh, right? And that's the mindset that we need to change. So it's not necessarily just go hug a tree, but it comes out of a lot of different spiritual traditions and philosophies, is how can I reduce the suffering, right? That's what we're trying to do. Suffering is inevitable, and We see that everywhere, but how can we take our little steps towards helping reduce our own suffering and the suffering of others? And I think that we don't necessarily say those words when we're talking to a large corporation about that, but a large point is really using what are the words people are ready to hear to get to that mindset of how can I reduce the suffering with the very, very precious time that I have on earth with these few people that are on this planet right now, that none of them will be here in about 100 years, and that we need to act as a generation of people here today that are doing their best. And at the same time, we need to look into systems that prevent us. We need to look at this divide between historical truths, between the global north and the global south. We need to look at how women are marginalized, how different religions are marginalized, how people, depending on their neurodiversity or on their way of living their lives, are put down by these current systems, and how that prevents them from being so. Yes, a lot of it comes down to me, and that's why I said I need a little bit more time to be able to think about this, and took kind of a 2 years of my financial privilege to put that away and say, hey, I have 2 years to think about this and
to develop, right?
find a way forward that makes sense for me, for my family, and for this generation of people that live on this planet today, and of the other millions and trillions of beings that are here.
That sounds very huge and big, you know, and it's somehow it's obvious that it's not a challenge you can solve as an individual. Yeah, therefore you need to whole. And I wonder, how does it feel to think about it, to get aware about it, and to realize it? I could guess it's also, or sometimes, or more often, it feels overwhelming, maybe. And, you know, and I was thinking about this kind of beliefs, how we need, maybe, or it should be dealt with the world. And I want to share one thought about this topic I have, actually, you know, because I know it from the IDG movement, from the climate movements, and so that this kind of movement has some perceptions what is needed to solve it, or to have a direction we want to go to care for these issues. And then I'm thinking, okay, maybe what is a good reason for the other side? Like the corporations, when we observe them, we come to the conclusion that this kind of structures and behavior creates suffering. And I'm thinking, when I'm talking to this kind of people, I'm talking about how can I inspire them, instead of to bring them to the point and say that they adapt my beliefs, actually, what's the right way, you know? And I'm thinking a lot about, well, what's a good reason for them to do this, you know? And I'm hearing it's a lot of, or my belief, it's a lot, it has to do a lot with awareness about the whole. And to make it personal, I have a good personal example where I can sense this kind of tension. It's, for example, it's SDG 16, you know, peace and so on. And when I tell people that I was a soldier and an officer in the army, and I'm still a reserve officer, and at the same time, I'm very peace-driven and do a lot of how can we... The same question you have with climate crisis, I asking myself about peace, what kind of structure we need to end the suffering, and, you know, and... this is irritating the people when I say I'm peace driven, at the same time I'm an officer in the army, you know. And I just wonder, this kind, maybe it has a good reason that both is there. And what does it mean, you know? And how do you feel about this kind of complexity? And I mean, when we talk about inner development, it's, from my perspective, it's a lot about this kind of, what capabilities do I need to be able to see this connectiveness, you know. And I mean, for myself, when I go into the parks, public parks, and sitting on a bench and listen to people, and I meet some people who tend or who are electing the far right parties, you know, and I have a talk with them, it's quite hard to me to listen to them, you know. And then I experience this kind of, whoa, what do I need to connect with them anyway, you know? So, I guess you have made similar experience, especially in the corporation when you work on sustainability and talk with people who are different mind, have a different mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And what is your experience? What is your feeling? What in yourself, and what, how do you handle it?
Mm.
What does it make with you?
Good question. The example that I always give, right? We're talking about being embodied and being in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
The example I always give is I'm kind of being pulled by these sides.
Mm-hmm.
My activists, it's my kind of, it's this side of me that's very upset with the status quo in 2024, allowing for atrocities of the past to still be here today.
Mm-hmm.
And that we can do better. I believe more than anything in our generation and in the new generations coming forward. And there will be nothing anyone can do to say, oh, but this generation voted this. It's fine. I believe that we are on the right track.
Mm.
Just depends on how quickly we get there. And that's then the other side pulling me out, which is, well, because of corporates, we are able to have cell phones, to have this discussion, to be
mm-hmm.
here on this part of the world, and right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that anything is black and white. And I also think that we as humans need to learn to live in complexity. We love simplifying everything. And that's just not how nature is. If you look at any component or even in your own body,
mm-hmm.
We know very little about our bodies. And medically, the world knows a lot less about my body specifically because I am a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And that infuriates me a lot. But if you look into the science and the wisdom, what we know is that the pointing of fingers, the yelling, the I'm better than you, that doesn't make a change. That's important for building awareness. There is a problem. It's important that people are, like, it's important that we have activists on the streets. It's important that once we have that awareness, then we need to move into collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I think that awareness itself, saying awareness-based systems, it's not enough. We need to go into this co-creation based. And I'll give you a very, very simple example. Jan from the IDG community,
mm-hmm.
He is from Ukraine. And in one of his videos, he said, the first people to support Ukraine, it wasn't the meditators. It wasn't the people that were sitting there with maybe some very key spiritual knowledge. It was the Burning Man community, because
mm-hmm.
they know how to organize. They know how to bring people together. They know how to fix things.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that I've been trying to find a way to articulate very simply. And he did it, because I think that sometimes we can also have this spiritual bypass. Oh, I am so great. I sit here and I meditate 3 hours a day and it's great. What are you volunteering for? What are you actually connecting with people for? And so when I go into companies and have this discussion, it's trying to get them to think about things in the way that is common to them,
mm-hmm.
but allow them to think about it in a leap perspective, in an innovation,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
We talk about Kodak. Kodak was this huge company. It couldn't fail,
yeah.
But it didn't do anything for digital, so it failed.
Yeah.
Oh, we talk about the opportunities that many of these companies had with new technologies or EVs, the amounts that Germany is suffering with not adopting EVs first in other countries,
mm-hmm.
all of that. So what I try to come in is with a sense of, oh, I could be part of this new circle. I could help this new thing move forward. And to me, I think that human ingenuity and human innovation is the way to incite people to be part of this change. Masamba Toy from the UNFCCC says it very simply that, yes, we need this inner dimension, but the inner dimension really comes into play when you give people work that they find is meaningful, that they can do together, and that they see the progress of change, right? And we see that throughout human history as well. And so when I'm going to companies, okay, how can we talk about the IDGs, not as a something out there, but how is that already linked to your leadership goals, for example?
Exactly.
And which ones are the ones that are very well cemented, and which ones are the ones that there could be further activities on? Or you already have these great leadership goals. How could we create some type of consistency around bringing in the inner dimension into the work that we're doing? Because we're also talking about burned out people doing too much work, and that work is not necessarily leading to the good. So there needs to be this mindset change of not we need to destroy this company and this company needs to be brought down. It's how could we help this company shift their business model into using the resources they have at hand to do something better? And you see a lot of examples of this from a factory farming perspective. You see factory farms in the US or even in Brazil moving towards alternative sources of protein or alternative plants that maybe have been stigmatized in the past, and that today people are willing to eat them and are engaged. So that's, I bring it down to their way of thinking and the wording that they use. And at the same time, try to bring in this, we all together, this company can be at the forefront of this new world that we imagine. And I think that imagination perspective is really, really important. And that the doomism is important for awareness to allow people to, this is real, but that needs to be the first. And then from there, kind of graduate ourselves into the potential that we can have. At least that's where I am today. Ask me again in 10 years.
It's a development journey. And when I listen to you, it seems to me that you maybe you can check in with that. It seems to me that you feel yourself or see yourself as a kind of accelerator or incubator for this kind of process.
Not alone, for sure, not alone, though definitely with others, though. So, for example, with the work that we're doing with the inner development goals locally, with the work that we're doing with the UNFCCC globally, with the work that I'm doing with women in sustainability and regeneration in my city, you know, there for sure, I definitely feel that space. And I think that it's important for us to bring out our traits that we enjoy putting out into the world. So some people really enjoy being that person that brings everybody to the ground and gets everybody settled. And some people just like bringing people together. And maybe it's a little bit of my Latino-ness, my Brazilian-ness, but I really believe in the power of joy and the power of excitement and the power of music and dance and creativity to move people into a place that feels fun. And I think that if we don't have fun in this transition process, it's very easy to not do it. And so a lot of times what I have noticed and I have perceived is that in Europe specifically, my normal way of being is seen as energetic, bring a lot of energy. But I don't necessarily hear the same things that I'm speaking to my colleagues in Brazil or in the global South, because they are even more like me. Sometimes I'm seen as, oh, Lila, are you okay today? I'm like, I'm being German. I'm putting all of this together. Give me a minute, you know? So I think it's also the way of perceiving the world and the lenses.
You know, what's kind of coming up in my mind is when I listen to that, it's like, actually the word being, you know, I heard the word from you several times now of doing things better, but I understand that it's about getting aware about potential or a dysfunctionality. And then I've heard from you this this energy of shifting the emotions who are connected to being depressive into joy and being alive. what you like and what's important for you being in this energetic field. And yeah, the word being is the resonance I have when I'm listening to that from you, because it creates a picture of creating spaces where we can be to open the space for this kind of question you mentioned, like what kind of leadership we have, how do we lead, how do we behave, and getting aware about what are the consequences and the follow-ups of this kind of behavior and beliefs, and to open the space to get aware about this and think about, can we do it different to have a different result and where we want to go, and also creating this spaces for community, and which is creating a different feeling for a being and a, let's say, a body.
Yeah, so I'm not promoting anything here, but in my pathway of, okay, how do I survive outside of corporate, I decided to open up a company, and the name of it is called Regen Beings, Regenerative Beings, mm-hmm. for that exact sense that there's a lot that we can do, should be doing. I'm a very big proponent of action. And at the same time, how are we being in these spaces as well, right? And what does that mean? And I also like the word being, because it can reduce this idea of separation between the humans and the animals and all of these things. Mm-hmm. So there's multiple connotations of why being mm-hmm. is such an important word. And being also, it can, again, coming back to culture and to the lenses that we wear, it can mean very, very different things. I am here being with you, and I am also here doing something with you. Mm-hmm. So sometimes there doesn't also need to be that separation between the being and the doing, that to be, I need to be still. And I also don't think that's the way that all cultures perceive that this is one way to be. And I think it's also a word that allows us, it has a certain level of something more to it. Like it doesn't sound boxy. It doesn't sound, it gets you to think a little bit further. What do you mean being? I am being. And what I also love is that in different languages, there are different ways that you can say the same thing. So mm-hmm. in Portuguese or in Spanish, we have two ways of saying I am, right? Eu mm-hmm. estou ou eu sou. Mm-hmm. I am being right now, or I am in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
I think that language is so important. It's so fundamental for everything that we do. And if maybe the way that I perceive the world, maybe as a German speaker or an English speaker, might be totally different than the way that a Latino sees the world, mm-hmm. maybe just because they have these two different ways of being, ser and estar. And it also, I think, allows us to say, okay, when I am not actively working, getting the money, doing the do, how am I being?
Mm.
Right? Not just inside of my own mind, it's yeah. important, but I think we need to move away from this individualistic mm. way of thinking and thinking about the collective. And how are we beings together, which is yeah, yeah. Again, the term of the company is Regen Beings,
yeah.
that we need to kind of find a way to understand, yeah, how are we feeling, and how a lot of the science that we have one day seems like magic. And now we know that if I'm sitting in a room and me and you are arguing, and we stop at the moment somebody comes in the door, that person's going to feel something.
Mm, yeah.
We didn't tell them anything. They're yeah. going to feel. So what is biologically there
yeah.
that we are not even perceiving, and how these things can be felt in companies. I think burnout, I talk about it a lot, but it's the perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those problems that we are going to solve in 10, 20 years. It's not going to exist anymore, because it was the kind of little step in our evolution that we needed as a society
yeah.
to be able to say, oh, actually working for 60 hours a week, not going outside, not getting any sun, because I am a biological being, is for me. I guess if I go for a walk and I drink some water and I exercise a little bit, I might feel a little bit better. It's important to recognize mental illnesses, neurodiversities, and everything in that. Everything we are is a spectrum. No two brains are alike. And at the same time, what have we been evolutionary poised to be today that we are not being, and that the way that society has shown us that is the way to be is maybe harming us and our overall collective as well.
And even the social media are promoting this direction, right? Of, I was thinking when I was listening to you that, you know, what you talked about, what kind of beings are possible and in what, when we are in which kind of being. And even when we sitting as individual beings here talking to each other, we creating a being. You know? And my question to this usually is, for me, it's good to know this and have this kind of awareness of being, and then having the ability to connecting myself with my being in the present, even by the dynamic around me, you know. And the other question it's coming up is, so I guess I need a certain kind of awareness to sense and being aware about this kind of beings. And how to talk about this being topic with people who have no idea of being, you know? I mean, to them, I mean, to them, it could be, it seems very academic or, you know, putting yourself over someone on an intellectual level, you know?
Yeah. What I hear all the time, especially in Germany, is it's esoteric. I've been asked, isn't this a little bit esoteric to think that companies should be doing good? That was the esoteric part. But what I like to do is, how would I explain this to my grandmother? My grandmother is, I'm going to shoot 88. Sorry, grandmother. And she's basically lived in the same house for 35 years. And the same conversations that I have with corporate leads, I have with her, but in different words.
Mm-hmm.
So the type of things is similar to what you were saying before, like, Grandma, what brings you joy? What are the things that really help you feel like fun, or that you used to do when it felt like fun? Or if we're talking about it specifically in a company, it's to say, okay, who do you trust the most here and why? And that itself is already a deep question, because I'm having to kind of single out somebody.
Mm.
But it allows somebody to kind of come into that and say, wow, I trust this person a whole lot. And I think that being point that you were saying, the being that we're creating in that relationship, that's the most important way to get people to think about, okay, wow, I trust this person. This person has given me something that makes me feel something. And then if I'm doing some work with youth, for example, then I say, okay, what are the things that you, that inspire you, or you inspire to do? And who gave you these ideas? Where did it come from? Was it your favorite artist? Was it your teacher? Who gave you the hand to say, like, this is something you should do? And so I think a lot of these things are bringing it back down to the day-to-day, right? How would I explain this to my 17-year-old sister? And at the same time, it's getting her to think about, okay, if I have a group of friends and these groups of friends are making me feel bad, how could I potentially connect with somebody that makes me feel good and try to move in that direction to find more friends that will make me feel nice? If I'm talking about it from a corporate perspective, you have all of these people my age or younger that are, I hate this company, I hate this job, I hate everything. Maybe they just have a boss that's not a good boss.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting them to understand that it's not you, it's not your job, it's not everything. Maybe that person you're having a difficult relationship with. So is that something that's coming from one side? Can that be repaired? And at the same time, I think one thing my generation is finding its way in is most of us weren't gentle parented. Most of us have a lot of personal trauma somewhere deep in us.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of this triggers a lot of the things in us. It triggers alcoholism. It triggers authority. It triggers hierarchy. And we can try to find ways to resolve this. And we can. And sometimes it's very, very important for us to say, I don't feel safe here. I've tried my best. I'm going to go somewhere that gives me energy. Because these systems exist. And some people are connected so much to these systems, they're never going to change. And the big thing about climate change is that we're not trying to convince everyone. We're trying to showcase, inspire, and motivate a core group of people that maybe have already noticed. They don't even know the word climate change. My dad doesn't know the word climate change. My, you know, grandmother. But my grandmother says, oh, I don't hear the birds like I used to hear it. Oh, it's raining a lot. We don't have water. My mom is second day in Brazil without water. They only get water at nighttime. So they can see the impacts. And how do you talk to them in that direction? And then how do you talk to the ones that are there that want to do something and move them towards? And we only need that 30% tipping point to make bigger changes instead of fighting with those that maybe have watched too many WhatsApp videos or anything that they've gotten to. So it's not the goal from a climate change perspective today. What I see is not how can we fight those that aren't there. It's how can we group together 30% of people, get them to get a little bit more people, and together move in the right direction. And the inner is all about that.
And when this will happen, what kind of desire comes through for you then? You know, because I see your energy and your motivation to contribute to the end of suffering and this kind of disconnection. And yeah. And I see and sense that you moving toward something. And what do you believe it at this point, at this place where you want to go to, you know?
I think I'm a person that loves data and loves the inner. So I always try to find the balance into that. So what I would say is, from a very clear perspective, is I would like that a goal of my life that will be a perpetual goal is that all children are given the same access and opportunities that German children are given, that French children are given, that children in the Nordics are given. This isn't utopian. We've solved a lot of these problems. We just haven't distributed them in a way that everybody has access to them. And at the same time, I would love that the kids in Europe, sitting in Berlin, sitting in Paris, have access to the nature that the people in my Cerrado region and Brazil have access to, that they are able to be surrounded by noise that is coming only from flesh beings and not from cars or motorways or anything like that. And I think those two are possible. And it's not a far-fetched idea. It's not utopian. We've done it before. And so what kind of keeps me going a lot is this idea that we just need to learn how to share a little bit better. That's my kind of my realization lately. And what I love working with the Global Innovation Hub from the UNFCCC is that they have a threefold vision and mission, and they talk about caring, sharing, daring. It's as simple as that. And to me, we talk about a lot how the inner development goals stewards are trying to steward the caring portion. And at the same time, how can we share this inner development with everyone? And how can we dare around it, looking into what has already been done outside? And that, yeah, if we're talking about pragmatic goals, it's, I don't believe we should have billionaires. I think you can have all the money you can have, but maybe when we get to that 999.999 million, maybe that's where we stop and we find a ways to share that with the world. Because there is no ethical consumption in everything that we're doing. I am responsible for the kids that have had to pull the lithium out of the mine and their bare hands for me to get access to this computer to be able to talk to you. And does that mean that I can't have access to this computer and can't part of this? No, because we've seen how that works in the past, that a lot of people get really frustrated and they're like, oh, I'm going to go to the mountains. I'm going to find my eco village and I'm going to just live there by myself. We are all interdependent. Somebody is going to come out with a nuke one day and can harm your eco village there. There is no way out, basically. We are on this planet together. And there's a really great song that I love that it's, there's no way out, but there's a way in. There's a way in of connecting with people. There is a way through this. And a lot of people motivate me. A lot of people are doing 70 billion times more incredible things. And I'm like, oh, that's amazing. I didn't know I could do that. I didn't know I could have a voice. And especially being a migrant in Germany, what I hear a lot is, oh, I'm scared of the German system. I'm scared of the bureaucracy. I'm scared of being outed. And I think that those of us that have had the privilege and the opportunity to be in spaces like this need to hear the call that other people are just maybe waiting to be inspired by you. Even if it's just one person, you don't have to change the world. But maybe that one person will go on to do some incredible things. So I really think that we need to be talking about this positive future, this imagination, and talking about how we're helping each other in that direction, and being very concrete about it and not listening to, oh, but yeah, you want everybody in the world to have similar? Yes, I do. And I think that's possible. And I can't wait to see the future in 50 years where we find ways to resolve the ways we deal with our economy, the ways we deal with our healthcare, the ways we deal with leisure, the ways we deal with other more than human beings, and listen to a lot of, and remember the conversations I've had here when people said, oh no, that's impossible. So yeah, I think I'm a realist optimist. And I think that there are clear ways that we can go about it.
So what I understand from you, I guess it's this need and desire for kind of balance, maybe. And yeah, and when all this happened, you have described just before, what would be fulfilled for you then? What is it? What came through and reality then?
Well, I've read a lot of Buddhist texts, and one of the key Buddhist truths they say is life is unsatisfactory. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I will ever get to the point where I'm satisfied with the status quo. I think it will always be thinking about ways that we can improve our lives for the world. And at the same time, if I were to think about it for me specifically today and my family, it would be, how could I earn a salary similar to what I was earning in corporate and know that those around me are also getting something similar? How could I know that with that money, I am able to go visit my family once a year in the other part of the world, and I have to worry that I don't have enough money to go visit them? How could I know that the food that I'm going there and buying at the supermarket, that it's not something that's going to make me sick and ill, that I don't have to consistently be worried about my own health, because that's maybe somebody else's responsibility of bringing that food to the table? That I don't have to constantly be vigilant about, am I safe if I'm walking on the street by myself at 2 a.m? It's fine. It's just a street. Nobody's going to do anything. That it's safe for me to walk hand in hand with my girlfriend in the streets. And that's not something that I can say for all parts of Germany today. But that, thankfully, here in Bonn, Cologne, that's something that I feel like I belong here, because this is where I met my almost wife. And those are very deep truths for me. So a very clear thing about a lot of migrants that come to Europe, their first thing that they're going to talk to you about why they came here is safety. And safety for us normally means two things. One is physical safety. Nobody's going to rob me. Nobody's going to shoot me down for no reason. And the second one is financial safety, is that I will not be thrown out on the street because I, for some reason, got sick and lost my job or something. So a lot of these things are comforts that Europeans live with today. And not all are Europeans, make that very clear, but a lot of Europeans that I would like to continue having, and that I would like for it to be true wherever I go. If I'm at home having holiday in Brazil, I don't have to worry about giving my German girlfriend the, okay, when you're on the street, make sure you put your phone here and make sure you do that. All of these things are truths to me. So I think a lot of people that, some of the people that are really great to talk about this are migrants, especially if we're living in a global north, global south economy, because the future is here in many ways, and the future is there in many ways. And I would just like to have both of those together.
The word I sense when I listen to you is which is really meaningful for you is caring, as you mentioned in the triple C thing, and the request to everyone to watch out to each other and maybe have this kind of trust that we support each other and being there for each other if we need something, so that we have this kind of safe that we can vulnerable and that we can express what we need. And because your belief is everything is there, we just need to share. And I guess when this happens, that maybe your imagination is that it's kind of flourishing and flowers who are create flowers, and then something like that.
Yeah. And for it to not maybe sound so so maybe out there, some kind of key things I would suggest for people are, if you're working in a company, try to understand who are the customers of those companies. Where is that money coming from? So who is paying your salary? You know it as the company is paying your salary. But who is paying your company? And why have you, as your company, decided that that will be the person you're working for? So that would be a very key thing to do. The other one is thinking about place-based, right? I talk about regeneration a lot, that we need to move away from just sustainability and fixing things. Think about regeneration, which is, okay, what are things that maybe might need to be improved in my city? And how could you go about just learning about that? Maybe the things that impact you. Maybe you don't have to worry about people that are without homes or anything, but what are the things that impact you today that bother you? Is it the finance? Is it the food? Go out and learn and connect with other people that maybe might need your help, or that would want to hear you, your opinions, or what your skills. And that last part is very important, is how can you take the skills that you've gained from your workplace, and how could you apply this back into the local city that you have? So I'm sure your city is needing some support with finance, with project management, with facilitation, all of these things. And to bring it really down concretely, I think if we were to do those two things, understand where your company is getting their money from, and if it could do it in a better way. And the second thing is, how could you bring some of that knowledge into your local city? I think we would be halfway the way there.
I see. It's like the shift, mind shifting from, we don't need to fight to survive as an individual. We can care for each other with our different skills and abilities to create this kind of safety and caring in our community and society.
Yeah. Sometimes it seems very, oh, I need to care for someone. How do I do that? Sometimes we need to get practical with it. So, yeah.
And even if you do this kind of caring, it doesn't matter in what kind of way you do this kind of caring, it creates a feeling by doing that, right?
Exactly.
And maybe also a relief of being connected by care and getting rid of the kind of fear of the unknown, right?
Yeah. Two last things there to me that are really important is a sense of ownership. I was part of this organization called ISEC, and ownership was a big one, right? So how do you have ownership for the work that you're doing, for the company that you're part of? Your responsibility. And the second one is belonging. Everybody just wants to belong. Everybody just wants to be part of a group that they feel nice. And I think that when you're getting more involved, when you're getting yourself out of the mundane tasks, it allows you to say like, oh, I have people that care about me. So yeah, maybe I can pass that on as well.
Ownership and belonging. I see we could talk 1 hour more.
For sure, hours.
So I would say for today that we can wrap it up, bring it to an end. And first of all, I would like to thank you to be here, being my guest and being open and showing up with what's moving you, what's important for you. And at the end, I usually have two questions. Is there something last you would like to share, to say to, so people, listeners? And I'm always curious, how was it for you to be here as a guest in the Empathizer?
Yeah, maybe my last thing is I would love for people to learn about regeneration. And there's so many books out there, and learn from people of color, learn from women, learn from indigenous peoples, learn from your colleague next door. What is this word regeneration? What does it mean for your health? What does it mean for us? And yeah, I love being on here. I'm excited to be able to have more time with you, because that's what I love. I just love being with people and talking about these deep topics. And at the same time, I know what you're doing locally as well, and I'm super proud of you for it. And at the same time, I'm so grateful because you're doing what a lot of us might want to do or are a bit hesitant or scared for XYZ reason. And I'm so thankful that you and the community in Dusseldorf and that everyone around North Rhine-Westphalia working around this are here and are present with the difficulties and are finding ways to come together that makes most sense for everyone involved. And yeah, I'm excited to belong more and more to my community. So thank you.
And thank you for your appreciation.
That was episode 74. We can do better. If you like the podcast, follow and rate it and share it with your friends on social media. If you want to be heard with something or give me a feedback, write to me at podcast@empathieschenker.de. On that note, see you in 2 weeks.